Late Night Live. Ideas and opinions from around the world.
I haven't told you this, but Horace is one of triplets, and that wasn't Horace. It was either Boris or Morris, I'm not sure. This is Late Night Live on ABC Radio National, and in just a minute we're going to spend a couple of minutes talking about what a wonderful day it's been. But first, let me tell you what lies ahead. Two authors who couldn't be more different. One of them's a bloke called Matt Ottley. He's just won this year's Children's Book Council of Australia prize. And it's a fantastic book, I think, but others don't agree. Both the Courier Mail and A Current Affair have gone for the poor bloke, accusing him, well, of everything, really. And his website has been besieged with emails saying he's satanic, that he's warping children's morals with gutter language, etc., etc. So we can give Matt a chance to defend himself. The other bloke is of Chinese origin, and he was born during the Cultural Revolution, had no education for 10 years, then was in the army, had a pretty rough trot. And guess what? He's now a professor of English at Boston University, and he's gone on to win the US National Book Award, which is one of the major gongs you can possibly get. So that's what lies ahead. But first of all, I think I might have mentioned that I all but gouged out my right eye. Thank heavens it wasn't my left. That would have upset my political biases. While working as a serf on the family farm, I had to be rushed to hospital. And ever since, the eye has been blurry and weep and tears just pour out of it. I appear to be grief-stricken. Well, today, both eyes have been weeping copiously, but not grief at all. Profound emotion and quite a lot of joy. What happened today in the United States of America, bless their cotton socks for finally getting something right, was transformational. And I don't know about you, I suspect that you might have had a bit of a weep too, or at least got misty. And I reckon, you know, hundreds of millions, perhaps billions of people have been celebrating this extraordinary event right across the world. I then went off to the Opera House and to the great big concert hall where Pat Dodson, that considerable Indigenous leader, was delivering his Sydney Peace Prize lecture. And Pat was also deeply moved, and he linked together both the election of Barack Obama and Kevin Rudd's proudest moment, the sorry day, the apology. All these events produced tears, considerable amounts, and rightly so. And Pat clearly sees, as I do, that the significance of Barack Obama extends far, far beyond the borders of the United States. I suspect that very few of you listening tonight, you're probably all out rioting, you know, dancing in the streets or getting plastered. But there may be a couple of listeners left, so we'll push on. I don't know if you ever saw the Australian story on our little farm. They came up to do a portrait of my partner. And in the course of the program, I confessed to a love affair with a bull. Yes, it was almost homoerotic. What happened was we went out to buy a bull, and there's a big yard full of them, and they're all jostling around. And one of them looked at me with great affection and came up and nuzzled me. It was a Brahmin, a big black Brahmin. I can't tell you how big he was. Was. And so he was the one we chose because he chose us, and he became my pet. And I could call this bull across a 1,000-acre paddock, and he'd come lolloping towards me, often dragging half a mile of fence around his neck, which didn't make him very popular with the farm manager. And he had a habit of lifting me up on his head, which was really sweet. But everyone was convinced the bull was a bit bipolar, and he'd finish up killing me either by accident or on purpose. So one time when I wasn't around, they sold him. And I think you may have eaten him, dear listener. He may have been in a hamburger. Well, imagine my delight when on the front page of the cover of Requiem for a Beast, Matt Ottley's wonderful work for image, word and music, there's a portrait of my beloved Malcolm X. And Matt, I don't know how you chose that image or why you chose it, but even before I'd opened the cover, you'd sold me.
Well, thanks, Philip. It's great to be a gladdy on the show. And I might add in to what you were saying earlier with the Melbourne Cup yesterday. I'm sure we're all exhausted now.
I'd forgotten the Melbourne Cup.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I took no interest in the Melbourne Cup. It was the other race that was absorbing me, but anyway.
Yeah, kind of took second stage. I worked as a stockman in far north Queensland, in several places in Queensland, and the cattle that I worked with most were Brahmins.
But nothing looks grander or more spectacular than a big Brahmin bull.
Oh, they're magnificent creatures. They are just the most graceful and yet the most powerful things you can see.
And yet, in the case of my Malcolm X, incredibly gentle. But enough of this. Enough of this. I should point out to you, dear listener, that here is a book which contains a sort of a CD thing. Let's play a bit from it to sort of get us going.
Yeah, baby.
Well, my beloved bull on the cover and this extraordinary piece of music within the covers. What did we just hear?
You just heard a Bundjalung song sung by a young man by the name of Shane Gordon, singing a traditional song. It's regarded as a traditional song. It's from First Contact days. The book has been modelled in the form of a requiem, hence the title, and it's divided into different parts. Each of those parts actually, collectively revolve around the part of the traditional requiem poem that comes from the Catholic Church, the section called Dies Irae, which means Day of Anger or Day of Wrath. When I was talking with the Bundjalung elders, I consulted with the Bundjalung people for about 2 years before I actually began work on this book. I was talking about the requiem, and they said to me, well, we have a song in our culture that is about Day of Anger, about Day of Wrath, when the world changed for us, and it's when the first white man came riding over the hill on a horse, and we thought it was all the one beast. The words in that particular song were very prescient. They say, watch out for this grey dead person. That's the white man, you know, grey dead person being a spirit person. He's coming to take you away. And as you know, Philip, one of the central themes of the book is Stolen Generation.
Yeah. So what we have here is described as a multimodal work, consisting of the formats of graphic novel, picture book, novella, and musical work. And the two main streams, there's the young stockman pursuing the wild bull, and the other, the reminiscences of an elderly woman on the stolen generation. It's a pretty big undertaking.
Yes, it is, but like a lot of big projects, it kind of came about in sort of bits and pieces, you know, little bits by osmosis, you know, other projects that kind of coalesced into one bigger project. I originally wanted to do something that was sort of vaguely autobiographical. The story of the boy in the book is based on, you know, some of my experiences. Then I just happened to see this Bundjalung elder speaking in a country hall, and her story so moved me. That there and then I just knew that a story like hers was going to be crucial for this story, because it's going to knit different parts of Australian culture into the one whole.
Well, let's look at one part of this culture. You're pretty candid about your experience in the bush. You like the book, you know, you like the stockman. Amazing, wonderful, salt-of-the-earth types, but you also acknowledge that they can be violent and have very cruel attitudes about Aborigines, women's gaze, etc.
Yeah, it always struck me, Philip, that, it doesn't matter where you go in the bush, the universal story you hear is that bush people are the salt of the earth, and I would agree with that. Wonderful people. I've met the most gorgeous, wonderful people, had the most wonderful experiences in the bush. And I'm not saying this is generally the rule, but I would challenge a lot of people to go into many stock camps in remote Australia, into the kind of masculine culture that you've got there, and step outside of the paradigm. You know, start saying things in support of homosexual culture, for example, or start talking about race relations. And I imagine that a lot of people will start experiencing the cold shoulder.
Well, this is where the book has got into trouble with your extraordinary critics, because you don't want to present a romanticised view of a stockman's life. You don't want to do a man from Snowy River. You want to communicate its grittiness to your young readers, and that involves you, well, I've counted, you use the F word 5 times. This seems to have driven people crazy.
It's amazing, Philip. It's a complete media beat-up. There's 10,000 words in the book. It's text-heavy, meaning that the F-word doesn't jump out at you visually anywhere. The F-word is buried in amongst that text. It's actually the language has actually been watered down, was watered down by my editor. The book fits squarely into the young adult genre. The Children's Book Council, their charter is for readers, baby to 18-year-olds. This fits squarely into the 16, 17, 18-year-old category. And as you say, the F-word appears only 5 times. The Courier Mail described it as being riddled with the F-word. Complete nonsense. Reporters that interviewed me actually admitted she hadn't read the book, and she wrote a damning review of it.
Matt, how many times a day does the average Australian hear the F word? It's just such twaddle, isn't it?
The interesting thing, Philip, is that all of those who've condemned the book have not once mentioned what it is about. You know, I have a feeling that any work of literature is going to be in some way like a mirror to a society, and sometimes works, you know, get held up to that society, and people don't actually like what they see being reflected back at them, and the typical human reaction is to become defensive.
There's another issue that's been raised in criticism, and that is you're accused of dealing with the issue of suicide as though that was a crime in and of itself.
Well, the word suicide is actually only mentioned once in the whole text, and it's in relation to the pain that Aboriginal families have suffered in relation to stolen generations. You know, you go and talk to any Aboriginal family, and I imagine most Caucasian Australians will be shocked at the number of suicides that they'll discover have happened in most Aboriginal families. There's a hint of trauma in the boy, the white stockman's, the protagonist's past, but the word suicide is never mentioned there. And look, is this an issue that is too troubling for young adults? I mean, really?
Yeah.
Leslie Rees, the director of the Fremantle Children's Literature Centre in WA, has worked extensively with young adults from private schools, from Catholic schools, Anglican schools, state schools, you know, not selected students right across the board, and we have had nothing but universal praise and encouragement. And
but Matt, the fact is that this book is not aimed, The Requiem for a Beast with Malcolm X on the cover, is not aimed at the same age group as Winnie the Bloody Pooh. Is it?
Well, no. And, you know, the ridiculous thing is that someone goes into a bookstore and sees this book amongst the other books for younger children, the bookstore proprietor is the person to talk to, not me. You know, I've copped a lot of criticism because this book has been placed by various bookstores amongst books for 8-year-olds. Well, it's a bit like, you know, going and seeing, I don't know, The Happy Hooker placed in books for 9-year-olds. That's not the author's fault.
I haven't noticed that lately.
No, but you know what I mean? It's
you
not
must
the author's fault.
Have some very
fault.
Strange bookstores.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Now, But the other thing is, the people that have attacked you seem to be oblivious to the infinitely difficult problem area of, say, video games, you know, which are essays. And, well, this is the pornography of violence very often, to the power of 10.
Oh, absolutely. I went into a couple of video game stores. I don't think I could, well, one particularly, I could not find a single example of a non-violent video game. And many of them had warnings of explicit language. And these are games that are being watched and played by, you know, 11-year-olds.
Yeah.
Promoted as material for 10 and 11-year-olds. It's extraordinary.
I have a similar sort of problem with the obsession about pedophilia, the great moral panic about it. And I keep pointing out that the real issue is what I call corporate pedophilia. It's major industries aimed at the sexualization of very young children and the exploitation of ever younger kids, with all the great armory of modern marketing, with all the child psychologists who work for the corporations. You know, so this stuff does get through to kids. I mean, it just strikes me as totally nutty, and you've been a victim of it. How do you feel? Have you been depressed or angry? What sort of reaction have you had to the attacks?
Well, initially I was upset, you know, understandably. Well, particularly when the hate mail started to roll into my website, and that started to occur literally an hour after Channel 9 ran their hatchet job on the book.
In other words, none of those people could possibly have read the book.
No. You know, there's to me, with the popular media, there's a kind of a yobbo self-righteousness about it, and it's kind of catches on like wildfire. It's amazing. But no, look, it's actually been a wonderful experience in the long run, because all of that negative hype has actually brought the book to a much wider and more appreciative audience.
I wish you hadn't said that loud. This is a deep, dark secret, but I always found when I was making films, the best thing that could possibly happen to you was to have a big censorship squabble. You know, we couldn't afford to advertise our films like the Americans could. But if you got into a major shit fight with Russell Prowse, who was the Commonwealth editor, heavens above, ticket sales trebled.
Would you mind writing to him for me?
He's dead, mate. He's dead. he only had one arm, and I remember Barry Humphries, who's in one of the films, we had a press conference, and Barry said that the Commonwealth censor would give his right arm to be here today, or the Commonwealth censor told me this straight from the shoulder. That didn't help. Right. That made the censor even crankier with us. But to their great credit, the CBCA, who gave you the award, have really stuck with you, haven't you? Haven't they? Let me read the director of the Fremantle Children's Literature Centre, Leslie Rees. He said, "We would never have put our support behind it and our reputation on the line if we hadn't thought this was one of the great books of this century." That's a bit of a rap, Matt Oddley.
Just a wee bit. The book also won the Queensland Premier's Award for Young Adult Literature, and when that happened, it vindicated both the publishing of the book and the earlier CBCA award. And although the Courier Mail tried to continue the nonsense about the book, as far as I know, it's all fairly much died in the arse.
Yeah. Well, the text is admirable. I think it has to be said, and this is not a criticism, it's just a simple fact, that the images, your paintings, are often very sombre, you know, very elemental. Even some of just the images of landscape have an appropriate sense of gloom about them. This is not a picture book. It's not a happy snaps.
No, but the book ends with some sense of hope for the future. You know, that it ends with the statement about the sharing of stories as being the beginnings of true reconciliation, you know, the listening without judgment, which is what, until the Prime Minister made his sorry speech, is what we as a nation haven't been able to do.
And it was what Pat Dodson was celebrating tonight at the Opera House.
Absolutely.
And I suspect you have also been as thrilled as I am by what's happening in the United States of America today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just sent a chill up my spine. It's Wonderful.
Yeah. Well, Matt, I think you've done a great job, and I think it's most unfair that you've been pilloried and vilified like this. But as you say, it's probably worked out quite well in the long run. Are you now getting young people writing to you, responding differently?
Oh, absolutely. Look, you know, one of the criticisms was that the music, because I'm a, you know, for want of a better way of putting it, a classical music composer, that writing a requiem, you know, for chamber orchestra for young people was just simply not going to work. But I've just had the most wonderful response, you know. It's interesting. I haven't had a single negative response from any young adult. You know, the criticism has all come from adults. The audience for the book has been very receptive and very encouraging.
I'm fascinated by this hybrid form that you've adopted. I'm not terribly familiar with these, this new avant-garde form of picture book, but of course it's essentially cinematic. Are you interested in film? Because what you've got here is almost a storyboard for a terrific movie.
Well, interesting you should say that, Philip. That's one of the avenues that my partner and I are currently pursuing, promoting this work as a cinema piece. Yeah.
The voice of Matt Ottley, Requiem for a Beast, the work for Image, Word and Music, and the images, the words and the music all work together to great and powerful effect. And if you've got a child who's given up on Winnie the Pooh and is ready for the grown-up world, and I think you'd be surprised how ready for that grown-up world many of your children are, this is the book to buy them. And this is LNL on ABC Radio National, Radio Australia, the World Wide Web, downloadable onto your pod on this wonderful, wonderful day in the history of the United States and of the wider world. And coming up, I'm going to have a chat with the fortuitous writer, Ha Jin.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.